Emerald City Video, this is Russ.
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
Hello and welcome to the Emerald City Video Podcast. It's Russ and Zach again. This time we're on our way back from New York Comic Con.
Yes.
And we're going to talk a little bit about independence in the age of streaming. We've touched on this. I talked a little bit about it with Zach once when we talked about how the Netflix algorithm sucks.
Yeah.
And then I think actually I talked about it with Ava in an episode that most of you haven't heard yet because I haven't finished editing it.
Yeah.
The Patreon backers.
Yeah.
Have the producer's cut. It's much harder to get an independent film noticed now because not only don't you have video stores, but you also... I feel like most things, if you just put them out there on the internet and that's it, there's nothing to grab people.
Yeah.
Recently... Recently I interviewed a guy who had a B-grade horror movie that he's doing. And he talked about walking through the aisles of a video store and getting grabbed by box art and then flipping it over and seeing what's this about?
Yeah.
And I feel like there's no corollary to that. I mean, I guess it could theoretically happen on Netflix, but it feels so much less.
Netflix, I've noticed, changes the art all the time. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's probably, I don't even know how that works, whether it's that's the studio doing it or whatever. And sometimes it's literally just a really shitty photo of some guy. And then sometimes it's an actual art. I don't know how, but sometimes I see, newer films, not by big studios or anything, but newer films come out. And it's some really just not even a actual. It literally just looks like a still from the film.
Yeah, it's like a screen capture.
And I'm like, how did you not? I can't imagine releasing a film and not being like, what are the dimensions? I'm immediately what are the dimensions at which I need to provide art for you for Netflix? Because it's the same thing. It's like if you're gonna upload a photo to Facebook or whatever, it's like, well, I need to know. Okay, the wallpaper is this, and the profile image is this size, and that's something you do whenever you're gonna give to a product placement. Like Amazon has specs that you need to upload when you're doing it.
If you when we submitted the podcast to iTunes, there's specific your header image needs to be 1300 pixels wide by 400 tall, and that's all so that if people are listening to it on their iPhone, that it looks the way it's supposed to look in the little iTunes play screen.
And so I don't really get what the deal is there, because I feel that's the way to, that's kind of almost the only way to do it, especially since fucking Netflix, will you allow movies to have trailers? I don't understand. I get that it's a huge database extra, but there's so much more film I probably would watch if I could watch.
Yeah.
I buy and I rent stuff on Vudu more than that I wouldn't necessarily check out ever. Yeah. Because, especially with the, a lot of people, especially smaller films, don't, they make the film and then they're like, okay, it's out there in the world. And I'm like, no, that's when the hard work actually starts and marketing and coming out with, a dozen different, versions of posters and stuff like that. It's an argument I had with Greg when we were releasing our film, and I'm like, well, we got to come out with the teaser poster. And he's like, what? And I'm like, well, you come out with the teaser poster, which is literally just a striking image.
Hi. My wife is watching. I love you. Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
I'm driving way too quick in Binghamton. So I have to slow down. But one of the big problems was trying to convince, no, this is a whole industry. It's the first film we ever did. And I'm like, there's a whole release schedule that provides websites with stories, basically.
Yeah.
The new teaser trailer just was, the new teaser thing was come out. I'm like, he's like, oh, no, we gotta, we could come out with a good trailer. I'm like, no, you just take 2 minutes from the film that's really hot and dump that completely out of context, just something that gets people attention. It's like, oh, no, we'll cut a full big trailer. And it's like, okay, yes, no, we will do that.
But you do both of those things.
But but like I don't, you know, I mean, now that everybody is releasing film, you know, I mean, it's like anybody can kind of release a film,
yeah,
to some level, whether it be on Vimeo, whether it be on, yeah, you know, I mean, I think Netflix is a lot harder, yeah, but you can get stuff out there, or even just YouTube if you want to just put it out there, but there's no good way, and I don't even think there's like a lot of good sites to, you know, I mean, IndieWire exists, IndieWire's great, but IndieWire, yeah, as we've kind of had the, I mean, I think we might have actually talked about it last time, independent film in big quotes.
Yeah, because Fox Focus.
It's like, yeah. Fox, yeah, was it Searchlight or is Focus now?
Searchlight is Fox, Focus is, yeah, Universal's, Focus, yeah, Features does Universal. Yeah. It's like, I think the first one of those was the one with Bill Murray and Scarlett Johansson. Lost,
yeah, 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 where it's like, no, those aren't independent films. Like, I'm sorry, if a film has a $20 million budget, to me, that's not an independent film. And if it has, like, you know, two big Hollywood stars in it, like, any independent film that has Brad Pitt in it is not independent. Like, at least in the way that, like, Clerks. You know, that, to me, that's Clerks in even the early days of, like, you know, Tarantino's work or something like that, where... Yeah, Tim Roth was still a big name.
Tarantino was a weird one because he got into, like, he got into that very early. He got into, like, the, like, bringing in established actors. And mostly he did it because he was able to find guys like Michael Madsen, where it's, he was established and people knew who he was, but he'll do pretty much anything for a buck.
Yeah.
And so, but yeah, I think, I mean, the biggest thing to me is just accessibility and the fact that, and we talked about this a lot over the weekend in terms of the comics industry, because my daughter is saying that she wants me and that I'm with Zach, which is accurate.
Yes.
I love you, Charlie.
I love Charlie.
But we talked about this a lot with Terry Moore about comics and the idea that, like, the marketplace and the press are set up to promote top-tier A-list stuff, and we still have not figured out a way to market things that aren't, like, that don't have inherent appeal to the broadest possible audience.
Yeah.
And for a while there, the film industry was doing a much better job of that, because you had the video store market, and you could basically say, okay, well, every Blockbuster will buy one copy of basically any mainstream commercial release.
Yeah.
And that doesn't exist anymore. And
well, so I mean, they even had Hollywood Video. Was it Hollywood Video?
Had
its own independent line, which always actually, I think the lining was released that way. And, you know, and like, they actually, usually it meant that it was a solid enough film that it was worth the and risk of renting.
There was, Blockbuster got into that way late and never really...
Committed to it.
Yeah, I think they had an exclusive on, like, Win a Date with Tad Hamilton or something for a while. But, that's one of those, like, to me, the video store, the death of the video store market left this weird hole, because all of a sudden you went from a place where studios and distributors were marketing or were budgeting for, oh, well, we know that we're going to sell 20,000 copies because, like, video stores have to buy one.
Yeah.
To now, there's no such thing.
Yeah.
Like, you don't get a big upfront balloon payment from Netflix or Vudu or somebody to stream your thing. It's all based on back-end sales.
Well, I mean, at the same time, which is super, which has been almost, I don't know, maybe even almost worse, is the fact that you also have the death of independent cinemas.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the fact that Syracuse, New York does not have one.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Manlius Cinema, you're not a real theater. The fact that my TV at home is bigger than your screen, and it's a hallway of death, and you show the same film for 3 months, and you only have one showing over on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Sorry, you don't exist. But Westcott's gone. You know, the promise of being an independent cinema at Regal never came true.
Yeah,
shockers.
Just like every other promise about Carousel.
About Destiny.
Destiny.
But I mean, like, there's so many. I mean, luckily we're getting, you know, even the Movie Tavern, which at least occasionally shows some independent, more independent.
They
stuff
have, like, that draft house spirit of, like, we'll do a special screening twice a week of some indie thing, and then we'll do a special screening twice a week of, like, something from the '80s that we think might played with beer.
Yeah. But you don't have, I mean, there's no, I'm like, I'm thinking, you know, it's like, I don't know where, I guess Lost in Translation will come out, but like, I don't know where the like super indie, the actual indie that doesn't have any like big, huge names in it, but still
a good
is
example.
Going to have mainstream success to some level as much as anybody can have.
Yeah.
I don't see where that even shows.
Like, I mean, a good example is look at something like Before Sunset. Or Before Sunrise, excuse me. I don't know that Before Sunrise could find distribution in the current kind of marketplace because Linklater was a largely unknown entity and Delpy was a totally unknown entity in the United States.
Yeah.
And so you're sitting here and, okay, so you have Ethan Hawke who had a hit and a half under his belt at that point and well, none of them were huge. So... But it, on top of all of that, I think that you have the white noise of the internet in that, like, you if you release something without fanfare, that it just feels like... I mean, it's kind of like the webcomics problem. Like, you can maybe name, like, if you're an average person who's not into webcomics or if you're... You can maybe name like one or two web comics that you've ever seen, and those are the things where you're just like, oh yeah, that showed up my Facebook feed one day, and I went back and read 30 of them because they were fun.
But then you literally never see it again. And,
yeah.
You know, because you can book. I mean, like you can bookmark things, but I mean, like I don't know. I mean, my bookmarks are I have like 50,000 of them, and I can't remember the last time I actually looked at them because they've just built up over the years. And it, thanks to Google Chrome being able to do it. But I mean, like even worse with you know, with cinema is that like I mean, so I mean, like Netflix is really the only place you're going to get that unless you want to go, you know, to the indie, like again, where it's like it's great that in there's that indie.
The Filmstruck.
Filmstruck, yeah, but again, it's run by the studio. I believe it's run by the studios.
Even if not, I mean, the other thing about it is that it's they market themselves very aggressively as like the biggest independent film kind of streaming service on the planet. But the idea of an independent film, yes, most of those releases are independent, but they're now established parts of the canon. Like, they're things that were independent when they were made in 1975 or 1985. Yeah. And now the reason that there's demand for them to be available digitally is because, like Eraserhead. Eraserhead's an independent film, but the reason that it's out on Filmstruck now is not because it's a great film and it's an independent film. It's because Twin Peaks made a lot of money.
Yeah.
And David Lynch is...
Nowadays.
Yeah. And so, because I had a Filmstruck thing, I tried the free trial, and I looked through it, and I'm like, I don't see anything here that's newer than, like, 1998. And everything that was there could have been something that I found, like, at a video store. You're not helping to introduce new filmmakers to people.
Yeah.
If the only stuff that you have available is stuff that... probably somebody first heard about it Blockbuster and hasn't been able to find for a few years.
And it's weird you don't have, I mean, I know Quentin does one every couple of years where it's like Quentin Tarantino Presents sort of thing, where I feel like that could be, you know, some of the bigger name directors like Chris Nolan should be out there, especially he's a guy who,
actually that Filmstruck does have Nolan's early stuff.
But no, but again, I mean, like that, you know, it's like thinking of ways that like we could actually, you know, again, curate was always the whole idea of this podcast and everything else, but like curate things and get more attention and be like, well, which one should we be paying attention to at any given day? I mean, like you get, especially for like horror and stuff like that. I get once a month, I get a email from one of the PR people with literally a list of like 25 films saying these are the film releases for this month.
It's like a publicist who works with, I think, three different home video distributors.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you get one email that covers like every release for a month for three studios, and if you're lucky, some of the more popular / more absurd ones that they think might be newsworthy will get separate press releases.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this gets very inside baseball-y, but like one of the things that doesn't exist is that in the world world of independent cinema, people don't have enough marketing money to really put their movie in front of you.
Yeah.
So, like, we'll get that one email about a movie, and it'll basically say, if you want to talk to somebody, here's the publicist's email.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you need to follow up more than just that one time, because most reporters, like, there are days when I have a slow news day and I could theoretically spend it talking about independent film with a couple of guys.
Yeah.
But I need to know that that's an option. I need to know that, and it can't, most of the time I'm incredibly busy and I can't do it when I get the email and think of it and would like to. And so you need to more than once reach out to the press to be like, hey, we exist, so that way I can.
I've tried to do that with documentary film, and it's like I don't even get those emails, which I would love, by the way, if anybody's listening and you're a promoter of documentary films, please send me emails, because I can do this sort of thing. As we literally get a press release or a response from a press release for an independent film that's coming out. But
go see Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
It looks like it's going to be good, and Angela Robinson, who directed that film, is directing Strangers in Paradise next, which is my favorite comic book of all time, and we talked a lot to Terry Moore this weekend at Comic-Con, so you'll probably see some of that somewhere.
Yep.
So.
But it's, And to me, I think that, again, I mean, I think we've talked about this a million times, where it's like, I don't understand why Netflix doesn't have a blog.
Yeah.
Like, or some sort of, I mean, they could build this entire media site.
I feel like they did at one point.
They did, but it was more of a, I think it was the way that Google has a blog.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so here's new developments, and by the way, you know, here's new things that we're going to do. But I mean, like, I mean, especially even Netflix's catalog of stuff, their own stuff that they're coming out, occasionally go through, oh, this is a Netflix original. How the fuck have I even heard of this thing?
Yeah.
Like, and I know that they just release a shit ton of stuff, but it's like, I not only, you know, I feel like, A, I maybe should have gotten a press release, but as a Netflix subscriber for the last 17 years or whatever I've been, like, I used to do the DVD disc deals.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like, you know, I don't know, I should have gotten an email, like, here's what we're coming out with monthly.
Yeah.
Which is, again, one of those problems where I know almost every site on the internet that deals with media does a, here's what's coming to Netflix.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at that list and you're like, wait a minute, there's not only is there no independent film there, but I feel like more comes and goes than what's on that list.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because it's like, I don't believe that Netflix is only changing out 40 films.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I get that's curated, but I'm like, yeah, it's great that Avengers is on there, but, like, I'm going to see that because I know I'm going to see that because it's going to be promoted, like, fuck, on Netflix. But, yeah, it's...
And I think the big thing is, I don't know what the fix is for this. It's very much, again, like, looking to comics, like, the comics industry is fractured. And, like, there's a bookstore market which supports kind of smarter stuff, by and large, and more long-form stuff. And then there's the periodical market where you get your traditional, like, 20-page superhero punch-em-up comics. And the two of them are competing for the same pool of resources.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, like, especially as the bookstore market driven stuff goes, the periodical market audience is very aggressively against it.
Yeah.
And so you're just sitting here going, I don't know what the fix is for an economic system that basically says, okay, well, we're not placing value on what you do.
Yeah.
But we still need it to the film industry still needs the volume of independent film to exist, because it's like they need the, you know, $200 million a year they make from the stuff at the bottom of the list.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like, the
catalog
can't function.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and also they need, you know, the occasional Blumhouse film that you know, they spent $12 on and are going to make $170 million on. But, you know, I mean, one of the big problem is though, that you don't have, even back in the day of the, like, the height of the video market, say in the mid-90s or so, or even early 90s, when you had You know, you had Emerald City Video, you had Chimneys, yeah. And, you know, you had a lot of independent places that were going to cover a lot more potential places. It wasn't that hard to, like, it still wasn't that hard to find certain things. Like, I feel like now it's like, okay, so you have YouTube, you have Netflix, you have Vimeo, you have at least a dozen other, like,
Vudu and Amazon and iTunes.
But then the biggest problem, too, is that you also now have, like, a lot of films, like, you know, I mean, Greg's film or whatever. Like, I mean, we it's available through Vimeo, it's available through a couple other Amazon and stuff like that. But you also have a lot of, especially, I see it a lot more in documentaries, on their own independent sites, because you have download services where people can do it through there, and they don't need to then pay, lose that 10%, 20%, whatever that Amazon's going to take, or that Netflix is, you know, I mean, Netflix is just not going to even take it or pay for it, which I understand a lot of independent people not just giving their film to Netflix, because, which is something that I always see in the audience, like anytime we either release a new COD or we do something, I get a ton of comments of Greg from Greg's fans, like, when are you going to put it on Netflix? And it's like, well, basically, you're going to put it on Netflix when you stop caring about ever getting the money back.
Yeah.
Because unless it goes viral or unless Netflix buys into it, Netflix is going to dump it into the catalog of 45 or whatever the fuck thousand films they're on now. And it's never to be found again. And so, and it's great that you'll be able to get it for free, because we'll spend money promoting it on this service, but we're not going to make any money from it. And I know that we're in this future where everybody should just do everything for free, because that's how, you know, journalism, entertainment, media, and everything like that. And it's like, oh, well, I'll just download it and pirate it. Just put it on YouTube and people will see it. It's like, well, the problem is that we need to be able to do the next thing. And that's one of the problems with, I find, like, I feel like so many independent films and the industry, like, I see, like, maybe not in the horror world, maybe not in the whatever, they're done, like, because I've always wanted to do this film and I'm going to load it up on my credit cards or whatever. I don't know how Kevin Smith happens to them.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how that happens, where it's just some guy makes the film with no names, nothing in it, you know, no one in it, and it's just a good story. So I can't remember the last time that I saw a film like that. I mean, can you, like,
Blair Witch, maybe?
Yeah.
I mean, and that's of course the irony is that Blair Witch being such a massive commercial hit,
changed.
It was part of what pushed the studios to get more serious about the focus features and
take
over searchlights and things, and to kind of take over that space.
Yeah.
But what it means is that now most of what we think of as independent film is very artificially independent.
Yeah. Or it's, you know, or it's produced by, like, a lot of the independent cinema you see is produced by some actor.
Yeah.
Like, it's produced by Angelina Jolie, loved it, you know, or knows somebody who knows somebody. And, like, you actually read into the backstories in so many of these, and it's like, oh, it's another Coppola.
Yeah.
It's not really, you know, it's like, oh, the person just has a different last name, and it's like, oh, you know, it's like Sofia Coppola's films, especially the early ones that were, you know, that were good. To call those fucking things independent, I mean, it's just so laughable when if I had the last name Coppola and I worked in cinema, I'd be fucking using that last name. But, like, the idea that it's independent in any way when your father or whoever, I mean, because there's a ton of people out there, is, you know, literally one of the top 20 directors alive today, whether he's produced, not actually produced anything of note for the last 30 years, but but still, like, the name, you walk in the door, and also that's the sale point. That's also the interview point for Janet Maisel, you know, like, the New York Times is going to do a piece about Sofia Coppola's daughter does a film.
Inevitably,
they're gonna write a film. We're gonna write a piece about it, because there's a hook. There's that hook.
Yeah.
But when you're just producing a good piece of cinema, there's no hook. Like, oh, it's another good film. Yeah, there's 10,000 really fucking good films.
Yeah.
Out every year.
I think part of it is that all these people who are doing, like, passion projects, a lot of them, they believe so deeply in the work that they're just like, well, all I have to do is get seen, and so they do things like dumping it on YouTube. And then it's like, okay, well, you made no money on that.
Yeah.
Because there's just no avenue for, like, yes, you can theoretically monetize stuff on YouTube.
Well, so there's no way, and it's unfortunate because you can dump it on YouTube and maybe it gets a million views, but not only, if you know anything about views, it doesn't fucking matter because views count only after 1 or 2 minutes, and, like, it's not like you sold a million tickets or you sold even 5,000 tickets, because 5,000 ticket sales means that probably at least 4,500 people sat through the whole film and, like, actually consumed the product. But it also means that, you know, for people like us who might write about this stuff, there's not only no way I could sell it to an editor, be like, oh, somebody dropped this film on YouTube. Hook. I mean, maybe more, I can do it probably more with documentary works because, like, it's more about the content and less about the sales aspect of it. But, I mean, like, within the entertainment industry, like, I don't know of a writer that would write about a film that was just dropped on YouTube unless it was, fucking spectacular and you're like, whoa, what the fuck?
Yeah. It's tough because, like, I mean, I've been in that position so many times.
Yeah.
Like, it's very much like when people reach out to you and they want you to cover their Kickstarter.
Yeah.
It's just like, that's great as long as it looks amazing.
Yeah.
Or as long as, like,
it has that
you've
hook.
Got some hook, a big name, or a blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like, end of the day, though, like, there are 30,000 projects on Kickstarter at any given moment. And I can't possibly write about every comic on Kickstarter or every movie on Kickstarter.
I mean, at least Kickstarter, though, the one positive aspect of Kickstarter, it has provided the hook to talk about the subject.
Yeah.
The fact that somebody is producing a film, which is another thing that a lot of independent directors and new people to the, you know, doesn't realize, is that the advertisement of the film begins the moment that you write the script and be like, there's a script that exists that is good. That's a story. And then the film is being produced. That's a story. The fact that the film was built by a studio. Like, there's a whole thing. I mean, like, you know that, like, the moment the next Brad Pitt being cast, or even the big independent star, or, you know, independent star, being cast, that's a story. You know, the fact that, you know, Jim Lee is working on this cover, same thing in the comic book industry.
Yeah, exactly.
Before he even does anything, that's a story that talks about it. And also then the buzz about that creates the idea that it's going to get bought by somebody or whatever. So it's like, that doesn't exist. There's no hook. Kickstarter at least helps that because people get to at least write about, well, this film needs to raise, you know, X number of dollars and it can get made and whatever. So there's a, you know, there's a story and there's a development of it.
And again, like, this is one of those kind of, like, it's a depressing conversation because there's no answer for it. Like, our current system is not set up to support independent artists, and it's only getting more so, and you start to wonder, like, is that ever going to be a thing?
Yeah.
But I feel like there's got to be on the horizon something where, like, somebody figures out, like, oh, this is how we do this, you know?
Yeah.
Even if it comes down to somebody doing the next, like, Filmstruck, where, like, you're actually, like, allowing people to, to upload their own shit to a place that, like, is a little bit more curated than anything.
Yeah. I mean, the only way I see it, though, is, like, I feel like Netflix or Amazon or somebody... I mean, one of the big problems with both of these sites is that Amazon and Netflix is the two biggest places that people can either consume media that's independent or whatever that's coming out with big... And the searching is... the fact, again, there's no curation, but it's also, in general, the searching is just a nightmare. It's just... Amazon's completely useless unless you know specifically what you're looking for. There's no... Even the, recommended thing is usually just literally not even a keyword thing, but a, like, oh, like, I'll search for, you know, Jeannie Devins, The Blood of Patriots, and the recommended are just other books that have the Blood of Patriots in the title or in the subtitle, not on the topic of militias necessarily even. So, I mean, especially narrative cinema, it's 1,000 times worse.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things. I bought Bubba Hotep. And all the recommendations for, like, you should check this out, it was like Spider-Man Homecoming. and, you know, whatever other movies had come out, like, within a week of that. And similarly, I would be, whenever I buy a graphic novel, like, comics are considered, like, a specialty product on Amazon.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you buy a graphic novel, and all of your recommendations are just like, oh, you should check out this Spider-Man comic from 1992, because Spider-Man comics.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's, I think that's the problem of the inherent problem of the entirety of the internet, is that none of these multi-billion dollar corporations actually want to hire human beings, because they're all on the mindset, well, we built this multi-billion dollar corporation off of an algorithm.
Yeah.
And so that algorithm is God, and that's the only way to go. I mean, thank God Facebook is basically almost legally being forced to hire. And they're like, oh, we're hiring 1,000 people. And I'm like, I don't even know what amount. I mean,
you're hiring 1,000 moderators to deal with 25 million users.
Yeah. And also 28 billion, or we're talking a billion users now. But also, like, as we've discovered, there's a great Wired article about the people that actually vet all the things on Facebook. And they're all based in the Philippines or wherever else, which is great for that area, Southeast Asia. And one of the things this article in Wired, I think it was like 2 years ago, it was a cover article, that it said is that the problem is that these people that are in the Philippines are understandably, they are going by the morals and ethics of the Philippines, which is dramatically different on what's shared on Facebook and what's seen than, I mean, not dramatically, but you know, and the understandings of things and different things like that. Like, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, we're American culture, but I think we need those people on Netflix and on Amazon a hell of a lot more. The fact, I mean, like, my understanding is you can't even buy advertising because we've tried, and maybe you can if you're a different level. But like the, you know, on Amazon, when it's like, oh, if you buy this, like, they'll usually put the, like, you should buy these three things and you get a deal, or it's like, here's what you save or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, usually it's just another book by Greg Palast or whatever.
Yeah.
When we do it for Greg, but like for Jeannie Devin, like her last book isn't I think it's going to have a re-release at some point, but isn't available that often. So she gets some other book thrown on there, and it's usually completely off the wall, or it's some like plant John, you know, it's an FBI, maybe it's an FBI related book, but like it's like usually a fiction book or something like that. So it doesn't match. And like, you have that problem all the time with, I mean, you were talking about comics. It's like, no, because I bought Ghost World does not mean I want to buy Batman.
Yeah.
Like.
And that's, again, that goes back to the thing of the algorithm. But it's all kind of, it's this weirdly interconnected web of crappiness that so many things in, like, so many things that used to be intuitive in the entertainment industry, and especially in the home entertainment industry, don't make sense anymore, because I think what happened was that the Netflix switch happened so abruptly.
Yeah.
And there was, I mean, admittedly, a lot of ill will towards, like, the Blockbusters of the world, the bigger corporate video store chains, where, like, a lot of people, and especially a lot of, like, young, hip people, were super eager to jump off that bandwagon and get onto the new thing.
Yeah.
And then fast forward 10 years, and it's like, oh, wait, we did all that so fast that we now have no idea how to deal with
it. Well, it also, because of Netflix went so, I don't know if the Netflix went so quickly, but like once Netflix inherently had this digital idea probably relatively early on.
I think the founder said that he actually, like, that was his dream when he founded the company, but it wasn't plausible technologically at the time.
But so what, I mean, one thing that I always talk about when, you know, people are so eager for Uber and Lyft and all these different things, I go, you realize that, no, you're not just saying fuck you to the cab industry, which for whatever reason you hate, you're saying fuck you to this entire industry that works around it. And like, and the way that we deal with it. And to me, when you said fuck you, when all the, you know, people, especially in our age group, said fuck you to Blockbuster, you realize that you said fuck you not just to even like places like Chimneys,
yeah,
and places like Emerald City and places like independent places that didn't have the, you know, terrible, some of the terrible, yeah, policies that Blockbuster had, even though, you know, looking back, I go, well, yeah, no, you should have, you should pay for, you. I literally had this argument, yeah, with somebody at, I think it was at the Cars, one fellow journalist. He was like, well, Blockbuster or whatever. I'm like, well, you had the, you had the film in your possession for those days. Why?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't we charge you for the days that you had it? I don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, we couldn't make, I don't know. Anyway. But, like, would a car rental agency be cool? It's like, oh, I'm, yeah, so sorry. Yeah. I handed it back a week late. Please don't charge me for those,
yeah,
week. Because that would be cool. That would be awesome if they did it. But anyway, but like, wiped out that entire industry, which also then wiped out a lot of the idea that independent cinema could be.
You know, we never did figure out, I haven't watched the previous episode to figure out whether or not when it disconnects like it, yeah, just did a moment, yeah, ago, in case you missed it.
I think it's still the same. It's still, yeah, the same video, at least for this time. Because,
yeah, yeah. It, oh, wrong. It definitely was the same video last time. I'm just curious as to whether, like, does the phone keep recording it and then stream it in later, or do we drop out for 2 minutes?
I think we just drop out for 2 minutes.
But, yeah, any final thoughts? Because I feel like we're getting close to home and...
Yeah, no, I mean, again, I mean, I think it just, you know, I mean, maybe this is the sort of shit that we need to do ourselves, like, start ourselves.
And figure
then,
out a
then
way
then hopefully get bought by Netflix.
There you go, that's the point.
But, I mean, like, I mean, we were joking around, what was it, Hollywood.com is still, like...
Hollywoodvideo.com exists as a, like, an entertainment news site, but they, yeah, basically never update.
Yeah.
I actually, a while back, I talked to them about... writing for them,
yeah,
because I was like, that just on principle I love the idea,
yeah,
but then like shortly thereafter was when I got a big raise and I had to go exclusive to comic book, and so I got the job, and before they gave me a username, yeah, I became exclusive more, yeah, or less. So
no, but I mean, like, there's still, I mean, like, Blockbuster, you know, Blockbuster, isn't Blockbuster Video or whatever it is, Blockbuster.com, just like a business card site, like, directing you to corporate?
I'm not sure. I think so, yeah.
Yeah, but which
I
is like...
I think it directs you to DirecTV.
Oh.
Maybe, yeah. DirecTV at one point owned Blockbuster. I don't know if they still do. Somebody owns, like, the trademark.
Shell of a corporation now.
Yeah, so. And, well, somebody owns just the trademark, yeah, and then what they do is, there are some Blockbuster videos in, like, Alaska and Texas, yeah, and some other places, yeah, where there's a company, I can't remember the name of the company,
yeah,
that licenses the Blockbuster, like, name and logo from DirecTV.
Yeah.
I think it's DirecTV. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. It's a satellite television company.
No, I think it's DirecTV.
Yeah, yeah, briefly, if you remember, briefly, Blockbuster was, like, a streaming,
yeah,
service.
Yeah.
But anyhow, there's somebody who licenses the Blockbuster name for some video stores in areas that are, like, technologically underserved, where you, yeah, can't get high-speed internet.
Yeah.
But, but yeah, the website itself, I think you're right. I think it's just, like, it points to whatever the company is.
Yeah, there, I know. So. I mean, obviously, it's crazy to me that Netflix doesn't have... To me, it's Netflix that has it, or, you know, I mean, fucking Amazon. I mean, and what's frustrating is that Amazon bought IMDb, which, yeah, used to be one of the good places,
yeah,
because it was so user-based, because it was actually like, no, really, if you like Schindler's List, you might like this esoteric film, yeah, that I like, and that could get a backing because there was a...
Because IMDb was such a big...
Yeah, and so it was this big independent site before it was bought by... I think it was an Imagine. I don't know. I think IMDb was just IMDb.
I think
before.
So. I'm not sure.
But, like, we need something like that even could very easily do that. Because, I mean, it would be great to be able to be like, no, you like... You know, you like Eraserhead. Eraserhead gets a lot of attention. There's probably a ton of independent cinema out there that,
yeah,
or David Lynch in general. I mean, like, who's the independent? Who's the next up and coming David Lynch?
Yeah.
Like person, like,
and that's another, like, even stepping outside of just the general idea of, yeah, like, well, independent film, something along the lines of like, who's the next David Lynch? Fucked if anybody knows, because, yeah, like, David Lynch makes films that are almost aggressively not marketable in the traditional sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And so.
Yeah.
How do you find that next guy?
Yeah.
Like, because nobody wants to take that gamble.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I don't know. If there's any people out there that want to finance a give us enough money to be able to buy HollywoodVideo.com or something like that, or probably be a bad idea to buy Blockbuster because I wouldn't want to have to fight that ill will. Yeah. But yeah, so anyway.
Video King. We'll just add an S to it. We'll be the Video Kings. Come up with a...
I also think that the, like, it has to be something streaming or something because I even think video is now, like, a kind of a, you know, you don't talk about, oh, I watched a video on Netflix. Like, yeah.
All right, everybody, we're going to go because we're driving. But we enjoyed New York Comic Con. I'm sure we'll talk more about that stuff later. We have a kind of a cool episode idea that came out of New York Comic Con that we're going to try to do soon. And in the meantime, I'm going to go text my baby. All right.